If any of you was in Los Angeles 2 weeks ago, this is exactly the same talk. So you're excused if you want to leave. But anyway, so this is the last talk of the day. So try to give a simple one. So in this talk will be no curves, only straight lines and their intersection points, lattices. So I will. First, this talk will be about lattices and cryptographic functions based on lattices, and specifically functions for which it is possible to give a proof of security. It's possible to show that if the function, a cryptographic function, can be broken, then some lattice problem can be solved. And can be solved in a very strong sense. It can be solved in the worst case. So I'll talk a little bit about this general area of research and then move to the specific objects that are the subject of this talk, which are cyclic lattices and some generalization that we called ideal lattices, which turn out to also to have some connections to problems in algebraic number theory. So lattices are very simple geometric objects, are the set of intersection points of an infinite n-dimensional grid, and there are many standard problems that can be defined on lattices. The lattice is typically represented by a basis. The lattice points are the integer linear combinations of the basis points. And I assume familiarity with lattices, so I'll go faster. So if you have any question, please interrupt me and ask. So standard problems, standard parameters associated to a lattice are the successive minima. So given a lattice, you can consider the length of the shortest non-zero vector in the lattice. And if you consider larger spheres, you can look at, say, the sphere that contains not just one, but say, two linearly independent lattice points, and so on, up to n, the dimension of the lattice. So the main problems I'll be concerned with in this talk are the shortest vector problem, that is estimating lambda 1, the length of the shortest non-zero vector in the lattice, and the problem associated to lambda n, the biggest of the successive minima, which is usually called the shortest independent vector problem, at least in the computer science crypto community, for lack of a better name. So we'll consider approximate versions of these problems. So in the case of the shortest vector problem, you are given a lattice, and the task is not to find the shortest vector in the lattice. We simplify the problem. We want a vector which is at most gamma times the length of the shortest vector in the lattice. So we allow for approximate solutions, so solutions that are not as good as the optimal one. Similarly, in the case of the shortest independent vector problem, we ask for a set of linearly independent vectors that belong to the lattice, of course, and are short in the sense that all of them have length that is not much bigger than lambda n, the last successive minimum. And the approximation factor gamma typically is a function of the dimension. We can consider problems where as the lattice is in higher dimension, then you're allowed to give worse and worse approximations. In fact, it is the best we can do. If we consider approximation factors that are polynomial in the dimension, then we already don't know how to solve the problem efficiently. There is no known polynomial time algorithm to solve the problem. And the best polynomial time algorithm that solves these lattice problems in an approximate sense achieves only a very large approximation factor, an approximation factor which is essentially exponential in the dimension. Approximation 2 to the n, or just slightly less, by roughly a log n factor in the exponent. And this may seem a very large factor, but still it was one of the big achievements of computer science. It was useful to solve many other problems in computer science, number theory and cryptography. So finding better algorithms is a hard problem, and if we take small approximation factors, say constant, no matter how large the constant is, then there is theoretical evidence that the problems are really hard. They can be proved to be NP hard. So unless P is equal to NP, in fact it's more like NP equal to RP. There is some randomization in the proof of the NP hardness, but modulo randomness, we know that these problems are unlikely to admit efficient algorithms that give very good approximations. So based on these hardness results and our inability after enormous amount of effort to find better algorithms, it is reasonable to conjecture that no efficient algorithm exists to approximate lattice problems, even within polynomial factors for which no NP hardness result is known. And this assumption that lattice problems cannot be approximated within factors that grow polynomially with a dimension has been used as the basis to build the cryptographic functions. However, we have to be a bit careful when we make assumptions about lattices, because at the same time, lattices have been used a lot in cryptanalysis and algorithms, and we know that, for example, lattice reduction algorithms perform much better in practice when you run them on random lattices than the exponential, the worst case approximation bounds. So, in practice it's not really true that lattice problems are so hard. Similarly, if we consider small polynomial factors, factors of the form square root of n, then, we don't know how to solve the problem in polynomial time, but we know how to give interactive proof systems for the problem that are efficient. And it doesn't matter what an interactive proof system is, the punchline is that if there is an interactive proof system, then the problem is unlikely to be NP-hard. So there is evidence that for factors of the form square root of n, the problem may still be hard, but not as hard as NP. And in general, as the polynomial factor grows, it's clear that the problem is getting easier and easier. So it is reasonable to conjecture that these lattice problems are hard to approximate, but provided that we make some remarks about what we mean by hard. And one first remark is that when we make assumptions of this form, it is important that we only assume worst-case hardness. It might be the case that random lattices can be solved easily, but there is no algorithm that solves every single instance of the lattice problem within given performance bounds. And the other one is that we have to choose small polynomial factors. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody finds out sometime soon that there are algorithms to efficiently approximate lattice problems within a factor, say, n to the 100. I mean, it's a gigantic polynomial. I mean, for all practical values of n used in cryptography, n to the 100 is bigger than 2 to the n. So it's, we want small polynomial factors. I mean, you don't need to get big numbers to get 2 to the n bigger than the other one, but when you care about cryptographic applications, you want relatively small values of n. Now, the value of the dimension essentially is the security parameter for lattice-based cryptographic constructions. So just to give you an idea, typically people want to use lattices in dimension 100 or so. So lattice-based cryptography has these nice features. There have been various kinds of functions studied and proposed. They can be divided into two categories, public key encryption schemes like the ITIE and WORK public key encryption, and one-way functions that compress the input. And I'll be concentrating on the one-way function class of applications in this talk. These originally were discovered by ITIE, and they were based on the worst-case hardness of approximating lattice problems within some polynomial factor. And ITIE didn't really optimize the polynomial, but it's clear that in its proof it was a fairly large one, something between n to the 8 and n to the 18, depending on how carefully you try to bound. All the results were formulated as there exist three absolute constants such that there exists an algorithm. There were many absolute constants, but the absolute constants were around 8 or so. They were very absolute. But anyway, so there's been a lot of work in improving those reductions, and this required many new techniques, and currently the best construction of hash functions based on lattices can be proven secure, assuming that lattice problems cannot be solved in the worst case for approximation factors that are essentially linear in the dimension of the lattice. Approximating lattice problems within a factor n is hard. Well, it's a little bit more than that. It's more like n log n, the factor required. It's basically an almost linear factor. And the fact that all these proofs are based on the worst case hardness of the lattice problems, that's really one of the main things in lattice-based cryptography. It's something that we don't find in practically any other cryptographic construction. I'd like to emphasize this worst case to average case issue because it's really something unique. Now, provable security is, we have it in many other problems from number theory. Think about the typical factoring-based one-way function, modular exponentiation. You take number and you count x and you compute x squared. And we all know that, if you can invert this function, if you can compute square roots modulo n, where n is the product of two primes, then you can factor the modulus n. And it's a classic result. The cryptographic function is called the Rabin function. And the proof of security has the feature that let's think of the modulus n as the underlying mathematical problem, factor a number n. On the other side, we have a cryptographic function, f of n, s sub n, which is modular squaring x squared modulo n. So I will be using in the talk the green color for underlying mathematical problems and the blue color for cryptographic functions. Now, in this case, the two things, the underlying problem and the function, are very similar, with n on one side, and for every n there is one specific function that is squaring modulo that modulus. And the proof of security shows you that if you can invert this function, then you can factor the corresponding integer. When you want to use a function in cryptography, you want the function to be very hard. You want that if you choose the key at random, if you choose your function from your class of functions at random, then you want to be confident that you will choose one of the functions that are hard to break. So if the red functions are the hard cases, you want the white part to be small. And since the reduction gives a one-to-one correspondence between underlying problems and functions, given the reduction, in order to argue that most functions are hard to break, you need to assume that most integers are hard to factor. Now, the kind of reductions I'll be using in this talk are quite different. They have a randomized property. Given a specific underlying problem, L, in this talk will be a lattice problem, the reduction maps the lattice not to one specific function, but to a random function from a given class. And the reduction, in fact, has the property that regardless of which lattice you start from, you will end up with the same distribution on cryptographic functions. Now, the implication of such a randomized reduction is that even if you assume that the underlying problem is hard in the worst case, there exists, say, a single lattice for which any algorithm failed, then the cryptographic application is very secure. Most functions in the class are hard to break. And the reason is that consider the set of easy functions, the functions for which you can perform cryptanalysis. So you can break those keys. So if this set is non-negligible, then if you take that single hard distance of the lattice problem, you can start applying the reduction. And maybe the first time it will map to this point, which is a hard distance, and the cryptanalysis doesn't work. But if it doesn't work, you can apply the reduction again and then hit some other function. And if the fraction of easy-to-break functions is non-negligible, sooner or later you are bound to hit the white area, and you will map the hard distance to an easy-to-break cryptographic function, run the cryptanalysis, and solve that specific lattice that was considered, that was assumed to be hard. So getting something like this with factoring-based schemes is quite a challenge. We don't know how to reduce factoring one specific number to factoring, say, a random number. It would be really nice to have something like that. And being able to give these randomized reductions is probably the main reason for lattices attracting so much attention within the, at least, theoretical cryptography community. So another feature of these randomized worst-case to average-case reductions is that since the reduction should hide which lattice you started from, typically the problems on the left and the cryptographic functions on the right will be quite different. There will not be such a simple connection like n and x squared modulo n, because we want to hide which lattice we started from. So before we go back to lattices, let me go to the crypto side and let me tell you what kind of functions people have been using, building, and analyzing. So the functions are instances of the classic subset sum or knapsack problem. So you are given a collection of integers, weights, a1 to an, and this is the key to the function. And given the collection of weights, the function takes as input a subset of the weights, adds them up, and outputs the result. So you can think the input has been a 0-1 sequence, and all we are doing is to output the sum of AI XI, where AI is an arbitrary element from, say, a ring, and XI is a 0-1 coefficient. So then the subset sum problem is typically considered over the integers. It is immediate to generalize this same problem over other rings, and this is what I'll be doing. So the problem of inverting the function is given a set of weights A and a target value B, find a subset that maps, that adds up to B. Now, knapsack has been around for a very long time, and it's a sort of sad story. There was a lot of enthusiasm at the beginning when in the 70s Merkle and Hellman came up with a crypto system based on an NP-hard problem, and people thought, oh, wow, and maybe in a couple of years they will also prove that P is different from NP. And these two things together will give us really a provable crypto system without any assumption. But, okay, the systems were all broken. There were a lot of attempts to build such systems, and they were all broken, either in theory or in practice, or in both theory and practice. The reason people would keep trying was not just because of the NP-hardness. After a while, it became clear that, crypto systems based on P different from NP might be not really around the corner, but still numbers can be added up very quickly. So there was a promise of efficiency from starting from subset sum problems. So people gave up at some point, and there was an interest in knapsack-type functions after ITIS, now almost 10 years ago, found out the first reduction that maps worst-case instances of some underlying problem to average instances of a knapsack problem. And ITIS function can be formulated as a modular knapsack. It was originally formulated as knapsack subset sum over the ring of vectors n-dimensional vectors modulo p, where p is not like a hard-to-factor number. It's just a small small number. It doesn't even have to be prime. And this was proven secure. There have been also a lot of improvements. But still, in practice, this lattice cryptography is not really taking off. There have been a lot of attacks showing that, they can break the challenge. There is not asymptotic attack, but there have been a lot of practical attacks to these newer functions. But it is important to realize that there are various reasons for the attacks to work. In the old days, there were a lot of attacks that exploiting the structure of the trapdoor of the encryption scheme managed to really break the scheme in polynomial time. In that case, it's clear that the scheme is broken. There is a flaw in the design, there is a structural problem, and the scheme is not secure. There is another class of attacks that is heuristics. You just take some lattice reduction algorithm, you run it on your system, you can break the challenge given by the designer of the crypto scheme. And these attacks are very general. They can be applied to any subset sum instance, which is an NP-hard problem, so they are unlikely to work for every single instance. However, from a practical point of view, they are considered by many the main obstacle to the design of practical schemes based on lattices, because you really need to use huge keys to avoid these subset sum attacks. But the problem is more of an efficiency problem than a real security problem. So let's look at efficiency. In a typical subset sum instance, you are given n numbers where every number is n bits long. And you can break it in 2 to the n time, so n is the natural security parameter, but the key size is not n, it's much bigger than n, it grows quadratically, it grows as n square. So if you want your scheme to have security 2 to the 100, then you need the keys that are not just 100 bits, the keys should be 100 square, 10,000 bits. In fact, there are a lot of other constants hidden in there. There are better attacks than exhaustive search, and keys typically have to be megabytes large to avoid heuristic attacks. So this problem was realized, people realized about this efficiency issue already in the early days of knapsack cryptography, and people came up with the idea of, let's try to improve the efficiency using compact knapsacks. Instead of using n numbers, you use a shorter sequence of weights, and you combine them with, instead of combining them with 0-1 coefficients, you combine them with coefficients from a larger set, so that exhaustive search is still unfeasible. For example, if you consider 0-1 combinations and you have 4 n weights, then exhaustive search will take time 4 to the n. Now you can achieve the same complexity for exhaustive search by taking only 4 weights and choosing weights and multiplying them by numbers that are not just 0-1 single bits, but are numbers where each one of them is n bits. Again, the search space becomes 4 to the n. So this seems a great idea. We use a much smaller key. The search space is the same, is very large, and we can think of using, say, a constant number of weights. Every weight is described by n or order of n bits, and we get exponential security, 2 to the n security, using a key size that is only linear or slightly superlinear in the security parameter. So is this a good idea? No. It's terrible idea. This was even worse than the other knapsack schemes. Once you modify the scheme this way to get better efficiency, security is getting even worse. The intuition is that you fix the number of weights. This becomes an integer programming problem in a constant number of variables, which can be solved in polynomial time. So there are attacks that are even polynomially good. You cannot even avoid the attacks by increasing the security parameter. So compact knapsacks were considered an even worse idea than normal knapsacks, but I decided to revive this compact knapsack and show you that, well, if you do the right thing, then things change completely. The attacks based on integer programming and variants were specific to the integer ring. If you use if you define a compact knapsack but on a different ring, then things might be much harder to solve. And in fact, it is possible to prove that certain instantiations of the compact knapsack problem are hard to solve, and in a very strong sense. If you can solve random instances, even for a tiny fraction of random compact knapsacks, then you can solve some underlying lattice problem in the worst case. So the integer ring I will use is a very simple one. Let's take polynomial rings with integer coefficients, and we want a finite ring. So in order to restrict the size of the ring, we can take polynomials, integer polynomials in Z, where the degree is reduced modulo n. We take it modulo x to the n minus 1, and we also reduce the coefficients modulo p. So essentially, this is similar to Zp to the n. And you all know how to add up and multiply polynomial and how to reduce them modulo some other polynomial. So I'll be representing these elements of the ring either as polynomials or as vectors, depending what I'll be doing. One or the other notation is more convenient. When using vectors, the ring operations are the vector sum operation modulo p, while the product is the convolution product that corresponded to polynomial multiplication modulo x to the n minus 1. Well, x to the n minus 1 is just one specific instantiation. We can consider in general the ring of integer polynomials modulo q of x and modulo p. And these will be the weights of the compact knapsack function. In fact, x to the n minus 1 is not a good choice. There are better choices. X to the n plus 1 turns out to be a better choice. But for the input, so the weights are arbitrary polynomials with coefficients in Zp. And the multipliers, this is a compact knapsack, so it's not, we cannot use just 0, 1 multipliers. Otherwise, you can perform exhaustive search. So we'll use multipliers, which are polynomials with small coefficients. D is some constant less than 1. We consider polynomials whose coefficients are not arbitrary elements in Zp, but are elements in Zp of small absolute value, much smaller than p. Think of it, say, square root of p, for example. And once you consider this instantiation, then it is possible to prove that if you can invert this function on the average, then you can solve the shortest independent vector problem and other similar problems on lattices in the worst case, but for not arbitrary lattices, but for a special class of lattices, lattices that have a cyclic structure. And I mean, you can see the analogy where the cyclicity comes from. It's related to work in modulo x to the n minus 1. So cyclic lattices are a general class of lattices that has not really been studied much so far, I think. In coding theory, there's been a lot of work on cyclic codes, where you take spaces over a finite field. And cyclic codes are arguably the most useful and widely used class of error-correcting codes. So lattices are also used in coding theory. For some reason, there's not been much work so far on cyclic lattices, but it's a natural definition. And we can consider all lattice problems restricted to cyclic lattices. For example, given a cyclic lattice, find the shortest vector in the lattice. Now, in this talk, I will not give proofs or anything. There are a sequence of papers that you can find mostly on my web page. Basically, where we are now is here. We are considering a general, not just cyclic lattices, a more general class of lattices, where the ring is the ring of polynomials modulo Q of X. And it turns out that Q, the good property that gives higher security is to choose irreducible polynomials as Q. So X to the N minus 1 is not a good choice because it's not irreducible. From a security point of view, the implication is that for X to the N minus 1, we could only prove one-wayness. The function is hard to invert. By using an irreducible polynomial, then we become able, so we are able to prove collision resistant. It is hard not just to invert the function, it is hard even to find two inputs that map to the same output. This function is compressing the input, so we know that collisions exist, but collisions will be hard to find. Now, ideal lattices is the corresponding generalization. We take an arbitrary Q, you can think of Q as X to the N minus 1 for the case of cyclicity, and an ideal lattice is a lattice that corresponds to an ideal in the polynomial ring. So we have a ring of polynomials that is like Zn, because we are working modulo a polynomial of degree n. We consider, so an arbitrary lattice, integer lattice in Zn is a subgroup. Now we don't consider just subgroups of Zn, we consider Zn together with a convolution product or other polynomial product depending on the choice of the modulus Q. And we don't want an arbitrary subgroup of Zn, we want an ideal of Zn as a ring, as a polynomial ring. So, this is what an ideal lattice is. And if you use ideal lattices for an irreducible Q, an irreducible Q with nice geometric properties like X to the N plus 1, then you get collision-resistant Nash functions. Now, in the rest of the talk, I will just fix Q to be X to the N plus 1. And many of the things work also for other polynomials, but let's just fix one for concreteness. One nice property of X to the N plus 1 is that if you take a polynomial, look at it as a vector, and take its Euclidean length or some other norm as a vector. If you multiply the polynomial by X, then the norm of the vector does not change. You are shifting the coordinates, possibly changing a sign if you are working with a plus 1 instead of the minus 1, but you get a vector of the same length. So there's a nice interplay between algebraic and geometric properties of elements in this ring, and the proof uses both geometric ideas, which are essentially from previous work on lattice-based cryptographic functions, but together with algebraic properties of polynomials. Now, I don't have time to go into the details of the proof, so I'll just give you some idea of what, for those of you that are familiar with the previous work based on arbitrary lattices, I want to tell you some of the things that are new when moving to ideal lattices. The proof of security works typically as an iterative process. Let's say that you can break the hash function. I want to find the short vectors in a given lattice. I'm given an arbitrary basis for the lattice. And I will build a hash function. And if you can break it, then I will find a shorter vector in the lattice. And by getting shorter and shorter vectors, each time giving you some hash function to be broken, I'll be able to find a very short ones. Now, in these proofs, before you typically needed to use not just one vector, you need a basis, a set of n linearly independent vectors. Once we work with ideal lattices with an irreducible Q, then the shortest vector problem and shortest independent vector problems become essentially the same one. So whenever you have a lattice with this structure, it is always true that lambda 1 is equal to lambda n. And the reason is that if I give you one specific vector, you write it as a polynomial, G. Consider all the multiples of G times some power of the indeterminate variable X. So as described before, we know that all these vectors have the same length. And they are also linearly independent. You can take n powers of x, and because of the irreducibility of q, you get that if there is a linear dependency, then q splits into factors of degree smaller than n. So they are linearly independent. So whenever you find one short vector, you get for free n linearly independent vectors of the same length. Okay, so what do we know about these ideal lattices? Practically nothing. Nobody ever looked at them. This is the first application of ideal lattices. Maybe that's not entirely true, because we'll see soon that these are connected with some problems in number theory, which maybe there is already a cryptanalysis out there, and some result that I don't know enough about algebraic number theory. I wouldn't be surprised, but I wanted to get a problem out so that if such a cryptanalysis method exists, we'll sign it before we waste too much time working on the cryptographic applications. So from what I know, LLL, lattice reduction, is the best known tool to attack lattice problems. And LLL is basically unable to see the algebraic structure. If you take an ideal lattice, a cyclic lattice, if you perform a rotation, an orthogonal transformation of the space, you change the coordinate system, LLL is a geometric algorithm. It will perform exactly the same operations. However, the cyclic structure gets destroyed. It's not there anymore. It's not true anymore that if you rotate the coordinates, you still get a lattice vector. These algebraic properties are basically destroyed when you perform legitimate geometric operations. So algorithms like LLL that are based purely on geometric ideas, they don't seem to perform any better. We try to run LLL on random lattices and random cyclic lattices, and we got that when the lattice is cyclic, LLL does slightly worse instead of much better. So I think that it might be the case that problems on cyclic lattices can be solved much faster than general lattices. However, I think that that something requires some substantially new idea that goes beyond current lattice reduction techniques. Okay, so in this last 10 minutes, I want to just say a few words about algebraic number theory. This is number theory 101 for computer scientists that don't know. So it's almost embarrassing to have a slide like this in front of this audience. But so you know what a number field is. So I will not even go over this slide. Eh? Did I spell it right? Yeah, you know. Is it spelled right? Yeah. The spelling is correct. Okay, so you know, two numbers are conjugates if they are the zero of the same minimal polynomial. Number fields, you know. And also algebraic integers, you know. So why do I care about these algebraic integers and so on? Honestly, I've never seen complex numbers used in this lattice-based cryptography before. But once you move to this ideal or cyclic lattice setting, then they really arise naturally. You can think there is a close correspondence between ideal lattices and ideals of the ring of integers of a number field. And let me give you a problem. I think that this problem in some form has been studied in algebraic number theory. I couldn't find the specific reference. But let me tell you what the problem is, and maybe you'll be able to give me appropriate reference. So let's fix an algebraic integer C of degree n. And you can consider the ring Z adjoint C, so that the extension of the integers with this algebraic integer, and is very similar to Zn in some sense. And the problem is the following. I give you an ideal of this ring, an ideal in Z adjoint C, and the problem is to find an element in the ideal such that all of its conjugates are small in absolute value as complex numbers. And we call this the smallest conjugate problem. And we are working with complex numbers, and these are complex numbers, algebraic integers, and so on. And in practice, you can represent the algebraic numbers given the minimal polynomial. It's easy to see that the definition of what is the smallest solution is independent from which specific C you choose. If you take a conjugate of C, you will get the same solution. So you can specify C by giving the minimal polynomial, and then you can describe everything using that arbitrary solution. So smallest conjugate problem, and there are a lot of theorems in math. There is a general result that's about conjugates goes as the Mahler theorem. And for arbitrary ideals, the constants might be absolute constants. I want specific constants. And I think that in general, the constants can be exponential in the dimension. But if you take, for example, x to the n plus 1, it is possible to show that, so let's take q to be x to the n plus 1. Let s be an ideal sublattice. That is a subset of the polynomial ring, zx modulo q, that is an ideal, and in the shortest vector problem we want to find a polynomial in this ideal which is as small as possible as a vector. We can consider the corresponding smallest conjugate problem, take all the elements in the input ideal, evaluate them over 2nth root of unity, and you get an ideal in the number field, and the problem is find an element in this ideal such that all of its conjugates are small. And these two problems are closely related. It's possible to prove that the size of the smallest conjugate is always within a square root of n factor from the size of the shortest vector in the corresponding lattice. Now, this square root of n factor is specific to x to the n plus 1. If for arbitrary for arbitrary ideals, for arbitrary moduli q, you get an absolute constant, which is not good enough for my application because the absolute constant, I think, is exponential in n, while I want polynomial relations, so that the problem is based on the hardness of approximating lattice problems within polynomial factors. Now, once you figure out this relation, then it is immediate to reduce the ideal the shortest vector problem over ideal lattices to the small conjugate problem by losing only a polynomial factor in the approximation. So if you can solve the smallest conjugate within a factor gamma, you can solve the shortest vector problem on the corresponding ideal lattices within a factor n times gamma. And the reduction is the obvious one. You just map one set to the other one, find the solution, go back and bound how worse the solution gets with respect to the best one. You can give a reduction also in the other direction. And putting these things together, we conclude that the compact knapsack functions I described earlier are hard to break on the average, so they are strong in a cryptographic sense, assuming that the smallest conjugate problem is hard in the worst case. Now, I don't know if this smallest conjugate problem, I don't know how extensively it has been studied in algebraic number theory, when also paying attention to getting polynomially large absolute constants. I mean, the most of the results from the time of Minkowski and so a century ago, they were typically stopping when they got a constant that depends only on the dimension without analyzing the dependency on the dimension, and the bounds that you get that way are typically exponential in the dimension. So that's not good enough for the cryptographic applications. But so from what we searched so far, we couldn't find any algorithm that would solve this problem. So I'll conclude the talk in the last few minutes giving open problems, and there are plenty of open problems. Of course, the main problems are whether this shortest vector and other classic problems are these problems still hard when restricted to cyclic or ideal lattices. For example, is it possible to prove empty harness results? And the non-empty harness results produce lattices that do not have this cyclic or ideal structure, so they don't say anything. It might be the case that the problem is not. And even for the exact version of the problem, no empty harness proof is known to date. And similar questions have been asked already explicitly in coding theory, proving that the coding cyclic codes is empty-hard is one of the main open problems in coding theory. Now, open problem number two. Well, LLL, my feeling is that it doesn't do any better on cyclic lattices, but can this statement be formalized in some sense? Can you find a lattice? So in the case of general lattices, we can exhibit lattices for which LLL has worst-case performance, achieves only 2 to the n approximation factor. Now, can you come up with a cyclic lattice such that the basis is LLL reduced and all of the vectors in the basis are very long, much longer than lambda 1? And of course, if there exists, say if LLL is provably, by counterexample, not a good algorithm, then it becomes interesting to find other better algorithms. And I think that the only way to get there is to use algebraic number theory. We cannot just go with geometry and hope to get much better than general lattices without using all the algebraic properties. Okay, it might be the case that cyclic lattices are as hard as general lattices. This, we cannot rule out that there is a reduction that, given an oracle that solves shortest vector problem on cyclic lattices, maybe you can use that to solve shortest vector problem on arbitrary lattices. We found reductions with average case to worst case. There's a much more kind of shuffling going on, so why not such a reduction within lattices? I don't know how to do that, but it's an interesting open problem. There are also many known results about lattices. For example, reducing shortest vector problem to closest vector problem, where the reduction does not preserve cyclicity. So adapting those reductions to the cyclic setting is also interesting. Can you show that if you can solve the closest vector problem on cyclic lattices, then you can solve the shortest vector problem on cyclic lattices? And on the application side, I showed how to build one-way functions, collision-resistant hash functions. It follows that you can also do commitment schemes. And in principle, given one-way functions, you can do a lot of other things, like pseudo-random generators, pseudo-random functions, block ciphers, digital signatures. But the generic constructions are very inefficient. So from a practical point of view, it would be nice to find direct constructions of all these cryptographic primitives based on the hardness of ideal lattices and constructions that give you good efficiency. And you probably know about NTrue is a lattice-based crypto system. And if you look at it, you will realize that it has some sort of cyclic structure. It has a cyclic if you break the vector in two parts and cyclic the two halves in parallel. But there is nothing proved about NTrue. I think that these results about provably secure functions that are based on cyclic lattices might give an idea on how to either prove the security of NTrue or design some other similar crypto system with provable security properties. And this is the last slide. Algebraic number theory. You know about algebraic number theory. I don't. And can algebraic number theory used to solve these problems, or also the other way around? Is it possible to use all these techniques from lattices, but specific to the cyclic or ideal case, to solve anything interesting out there? Or perform a worst case to average case reduction proof of security within the algebraic number theory setting without having to go back and forth to lattices, which is what we are currently doing. Okay, so this concludes my talk.